This is a Pinball News production.
Okay. All right. Well, my name is Ben Heck and Dorn. And so I'm here at the show to talk about, well, the schedule said I was going to talk about the Ben Heck show, but I figured I should probably talk more about pinball because we brought some pinball machines with us. Well, I didn't bring them with me. They didn't fit in the overhead bin. But I'm going to talk about my history with working with pinball, how I got started with it, why I did it, and, you know, basically try to explain myself. So, yeah, that's the point of today. Yeah. So it was about 2005, I want to say. I had just built a Neo Geo custom arcade machine because I like Neo Geo. And I was like, what's going to be my next project? So I thought, okay, I'll make a pinball machine because that sounds like something really complex and, you know, hardcore. So I was like, okay, what's the theme going to be? And it was like, I was like, well, I should make it really dumb and dorky. And I was thinking either like Bruce Campbell or Bill Paxton, you know, kind of like geek movie stars. They went with Bill Paxton because it had more of a WTF factor to it. So when I first started it, I wired up a dot matrix display by hand. I don't know why. I guess I was crazy. But again, this is like 10 or 11 years ago. I didn't really understand what parts were available. I didn't know anyone in the pinball community. I was just, you know, winging it. And I still have that coaster too, that crappy coaster. That was really nice. I stole that from a bar. And I went into the bar like 10 years later, and I'm like, hey, you still have those cool coasters? I want to steal another one. They're like, no, they've all been stolen. So when I wired it up by hand with a bunch of shift registers, and it was so dumb. And this is still in the Bill Paxton game today, and most of them still work. And that game is now immortalized up at the SS Billiards up in, Minneapolis, yes. So I started with a cabinet. I made the cabinet first because I didn't have anything else to build it in, so I did it all from scratch. I like went to the bowling alley and measured some pinball machines and used that for my reference. It was very, very lame. And I also wired up all the circuits by hand. This is a light and switch driver board. And a lot of the stuff, you know, I was doing it by hand, but at least, you know, I could prototype it that way. And we did this when we went forward, too. Like, we wired up by hand a prototype system, I think after Bill Paxton, and that eventually evolved into the system that's in the Rob Zombie game today. So that's when I also started using SD cards. SD cards are really a handy way to store lots of information. This is a SD card reader I wired up. Again, the Bill Paxton game was very primitive. We had one card for sound effects and another card for music. So dumb, because I didn't know what I was doing. So we started with like a foam test. So this was a piece of high-density prototyping foam that I obtained. And you can see I kind of just basically just roughed in a few things just to get it working. Then I had like this 24-volt power supply, and I'm like, oh, I can use this to power the flippers, even though I know now that's not nearly enough voltage. But it was so thrilling, like just getting the flippers to go, because, you know, if you 12 volts won't do it, but 24 will. And, yeah, so that's kind of how I started the prototyping. Oh, and then on the right, I don't know if you can see it. I have this really old HDTV, CRTV. CRT. It weighed a ton. I gave it to a friend of mine. I think it might have been a Sony. I don't know.
What was those tubes?
Yeah, those things were like 400 pounds.
Yeah, like a friend of mine had one of those like Vegas or Wegas. And I mean, back in the day, it was really very badass, but God, it was heavy. Because, you know, however, you know, the bigger it is, the thicker the glass has to be. And it's like basically a big chunk of rock. Anyway, I started advancing it. So I have like a wooden version here, which kind of resembles what the game ended up being. And then I also was working on toys. So when I was younger, I was really interested in independent movies and making, you know, filming things in my backyard, which I'm trying to get back into, actually. So one of the things I enjoyed building things and making props. So we had like a can that would automatically crush itself, a can of hams in the actual game. Because for whatever reason, Bill Paxton's always drinking hams in his movies. It must be some sort of inside joke. And there's a talking fish, too, which you can see I did with aluminum extrusions. Then I don't even think they had flatbed printers back then in 2009. Well, maybe they did, but we didn't have access to one. So I actually printed out the playfield on a wide format printer. And if you look, see how the head's going back and forth? When you print out something wide, if you want it to be dimensionally accurate as much as possible, if it's a friction feed, it's going to have the least accuracy in the axis of the feed and more accuracy in the head, because the head's actually controlled, whereas the feed is going to be a little bit of slop. That's why I printed it sideways, so it would have more accuracy. If I printed it lengthwise, it would have deviations by the time it got to the end of the play field. It still wasn't quite perfect, but it was close enough. So this is me. I'm really happy because I've made the first whitewood for Bill Paxton Pinball, even though, you know, if I only knew what the future held. So this is when I pretty much put most of it together. So that's Brittany Daniels from Club Dread, because it's a pinball machine, so you got to have the hot chick because pinball. I was really proud because, like, the apron, well, it's not in place, but I had her torso continue onto the apron, and I actually scaled it a little bit so the perspective would look correct from the apron to the play field. That was way more detail than we needed. So then, I was able to steal most of these pictures. I mean, find most of these pictures off of the internet. Because I think he had that show Big Love where he's got like three wives. So there's actually some decent high-resolution stuff for that. So that was the first pinball thing that I did kind of as a fun project. And the thing that was cool about it is I took it to the Midwest Gaming Classic, which is a show in Wisconsin. And, then all of a sudden, like, pin people were like, wow, you built this thing. Now I will talk to you. That's the thing, like, if you want to, like, really get people to talk to you, you kind of do something. So then all of a sudden, like, you know, people like Dennis Norman, Steve Ritchie, you know, they started talking to me and, like, giving me cool advice. And that's kind of how I got roped into it. And that's also how I met Chuck Emery from Spooky Pinball, because he made a custom game as well. Like, some of you may have seen it's like a Godzilla game. He took a Firepower 2, I think, and turned it into Godzilla. And he had a flatbed printer, so I'm like, I need to become friends with this guy. But look what happened. Any quick questions about the Bill Paxton game for the next section?
How long did it take you?
Well, I started tinkering with it and wiring it like in 2006, and it was completed in early 2010. But most of the work was done like from 2009 to 2010. So like summer of 2009, I started like wiring up the microcontrollers and the circuitry, and most of it was done in about 10 months.
Was it kind of hard a project because you were talking about like having two SD cards where you constantly, because you're learning so much so quickly?
Yeah, I didn't know what I was doing. Yeah. Now I just pretend better at not knowing what I'm doing.
did you run into a problem where it's like, oh, I got to redo this, I got to refactor this?
Not really. I was using this Parallax Propeller multi-core 32-bit microcontroller, which was actually really good at doing many things at the same time, and we still use it in the new games. So I didn't really have to backtrack too much. I would say there were a lot more mechanical issues than programming issues. Anything else on this one?
What would you do if you were to build it your first time today?
I would build it correctly. I mean, I was just doing everything by sight, so I wasn't using a lot of standard parts. And I would say the same thing about America's Most Haunted as well. There's a lot of things I would have done differently on that because Chuck had to re-engineer a lot of it to make it production ready, but of course that didn't start as a game intended for production as well. So if I do another game, I'm going to basically try to make everything using as many standard parts as possible and not do things from the ground up, despite the fact that I want to. Yes, sir?
What is it? You call it production something control? That's a PIC.
The audio video processor is a Parallax Propeller. And the PIC, yeah, what is it, peripheral interface controller is what it actually stands for. So we didn't start using the PIC until 2011, I want to say, which will actually be in the next section. So then we were like, hey, let's make a game based off Lost, the TV show, because we liked it at the time, even after seeing the ending. So I was like, oh, this will be fun. So this is when I started actually working with other people, and I started working with, like, Chuck. So one of Chuck's friends wanted to help make the game. So I thought it'd be really clever, and see how there's this piece of polycarbonate on the right-hand side of the screen? I put all of these screw holes in it, and the idea was you could rapidly screw geometric blocks into the underside of this plastic and then rapidly test geometry. I thought I was being so clever, but in reality, hot glue and foam core is much better. But we actually got really far in this game. It was basically done, but it didn't shoot worth a crap, which is why we ended up destroying it. Yeah, I mean, it had like a six-ball donkey wheel lock, and you can actually buy a lot of official Lost toys. Like, you can get, well, the ship wasn't from Lost, but you can get like this, who was the woman that got shot, the blonde woman. You can get blonde woman who got shot action figure lying on the beach. And like, it even comes with, the action figure even came with a oceanic water bottle. So yeah, we had, there's a polar bear. I think we got him from Hallmark. And then this baby was like, I think we got that at, someone found it at like a Christian bookstore. I think it's supposed to be Jesus or something. Yeah. We're like, okay, that can be the baby from.
Painted blonde, your father.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, because Jesus was obviously blonde, yes. According to all the drawings. But one thing we did with this game was we just started doing 3D printed parts. So we had the atomic bomb from the Lost show. We made the scaffolding and then the tower thing. And then on the left there, that silver blob, that was a 3D printed part we actually tried to make for the Bill Paxton game. We wanted to have like an Apollo lunar lander module. And my friend had just built this homebrew 3D printer and it sucked. Well, it wasn't really his fault that it sucked. I mean, this is before anyone in the hobbyist community cared about 3D printers. So he kept that crappy part all these years. And then you see that white piece? That was actually the same model printed with a modern, good 3D printer. So by looking at the one on the right, you can see how poor the early printers were. But, you know, it was a good thing to start doing because we used a lot of 3D printing prototyping for America's Most Haunted. Not as much for Rob Zombie, but it was definitely something to get into. So this game was going to have a color display, but it kind of sucked, but it did have it. And now we have a color display with Rob Zombie, and all the future games love a color display because it's really no more expensive than a dot matrix. What nice thing about Lost is it was a modern TV show, so there's just oodles and oodles of images you could borrow off Google search. Although it was kind of interesting, I think about a year after we gave up on the game and took it apart, and like you know, everyone was like, "Ooh, I want the side panel of Evangeline Lilly." Also, we wanted to make we wanted to try to connect all the games. Like we knew that Jack was making Hobbit, so I'm like, "Oh, we got to put Evangeline Lilly in this so it'll connect to Hobbit." So. And then in Lost, the guy who plays Locke's dad was the bar owner in Roadhouse. So we made sure he was on there, too, because I'd also like to eventually make a Roadhouse pin. I probably never will, but... yeah, so things we learned from this. Don't spend time on concepts you can't sell. I mean, interestingly enough, like a year after we finished it, someone from Bad Robot emailed me and asked if they could buy it, and I was like, well, it got torn to bits. And then I saw Star Trek Into Darkness, and I was like, oh, God. I don't even know if I'd want to sell it to them now. Make multiple whitewoods before going to color. We were like, oh, let's just build this, you know, blah, blah, blah. We know what we're doing, ha, 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 and we didn't. We weren't smart enough to realize how dumb we were. How a game shoots is everything. It's Roger Sharp's story here. So when I first met Roger Sharp, the pinball, you know, god or whatever you want to call him, it was at MGC, and I knew who he was. I'd heard the story about the court case, but I didn't recognize him. So he played the Bill Paxton game for like an hour, and I was talking to him for a while, and then I finally realized who he was. I'm like, oh crap, it's Roger Sharp. And then like a year or two later, Roger was playing the Lost game, or he had played it, and I didn't know about it. And then another 2 years later, or a year later, I was talking to Roger regarding America's Most Haunted, and he's like, I got to tell you, Ben, you know, when I first met you, I thought your Bill Paxton game was pretty good for, you know, a first try, and then you made that crappy Lost game, and I was like, oh, no, you know, he's lost. But now I see that you have redeemed yourself. So it was kind of fun to learn that from him, and I'm like, you know what, you're absolutely right, because you got to test everything extensively. It's good to get a bad game out of your system, like taking a massive dump after a long journey. And, it was... Right, obviously Roger Sharp knows his stuff, so you know, it was very good to get that feedback from him. However, you know, some good things came out of it. The system that we kind of prototyped for the Lost game eventually evolved into the Pin Hex system that we use in America's Most Haunted and also Rob Zombie. So it wasn't a complete loss. And you know, whichever one of my friends got the cool pictures of what's her face, you know, I think they hung them up in their den or something.
I think she's on posters. You can probably.
Yeah, but what a big giant wooden piece of it. Yeah. Yeah. So the Lost thing kind of, you know, I was disappointed in myself. So I'm like, you know what? I got to make a better game. So I'm like, I need to make something unlicensed that I can sell because it takes too much work to not be able to sell it. I know that sounds awful, you know, but that's the way I think. Because I don't really do things like this as a hobby, because I'm pretty good at turning hobbies into jobs, so I want something I can sell. So I was either going to do Ghost Squad or Bible Adventures. Bible Adventures started as a joke, but they were like, you know what? This could work. And as long as you made it, like, it's not preachy, just like, you know, like the classic stories, like kind of like Cecil B. DeMille kind of stuff. But we didn't do that. We went with Ghost Squad because I thought Ghost Squad would be a lot funnier, like making fun of all the ghost shows. Like, I sense a spirit next to me. Communicate. Actually, yeah, there's a spirit of Chuck. and KT here with me at the show. What do you think, Chuck?
Oh, that sounds good, Ben.
Also, with the ghost thing, Wizard of Oz obviously had been out, and I kept seeing on Pinside, oh, I hate this theme. I hate this theme, Wizard of Oz. Oh, my wife likes it. Here's my money. And I'm like, So, yeah, that's why I thought, you know, ghost stuff, you know, that, you know, maybe that could, you know, appeal to, like, some of the Pinhead's wives a little bit. I don't know if that really worked, but that was part of my intention. But I don't know. There also hadn't been, like, a ghost movie, ghost horror theme, like, since what, Elvira? So I just thought it'd be cool. So we started in early 2012, and we finished it in early 2014, and I'm still working on code updates. So this is around the time I started working with John Papaduke and that whole thing. Now, I guess John didn't really practice what he preached. He actually gave me a lot of good advice, which I used, and I listened. I listened to him. I think he should have listened to himself, maybe, but whatever. So that's when I started getting addicted to foam core, and or Nordmanite, as they call it in the pinball industry, because Dennis Nordman loves it. So we started with a wooden playfield, but we were putting on foam core to see if it shot. And hot glue is better than computers. I mean, I always tell people this, like, always build things for real, make sure it works, and then scan it into the computer. So we were doing months and months of iterations just with foam core. And one of the things that John taught me is if it shoots good with a highly resistive material like foam core, it'll shoot really good in metal and wood and plastic. Almost too good, because America's Most Haunted ended up playing very fast. Make it shoot great first, which is a big thing we learned from Lost. So, yeah, I was a lot more cautious with this project. I wanted to make sure that it was right. So you can see there's like a big, dumb blue hand. The psychic hand target was really going to be a hand, but that was too literal, and it cost money. So we costed it out. And if you look in the center, you can see the ghost isn't there. Originally, it was going to be like this rotating wheel thing. I don't know why. I think it was kind of like the spinner on Arabian Nights. And there was a captive ball, too, at one point. But that got turned into a target. But other things are pretty much the same. Like the right ramp is the same. The jump ramp. But then you can see there's like a crawl space. There was going to be a diverter up there, which could divert the ball into the crawl space. And then it would cross over into the left. And there's also going to be a vuck that could also bring the ball over there. But a lot of that stuff we eventually took out just because we didn't feel it was necessary for the rules. Because we were also kind of starting to think about the rules at the same time. Also, America's Most Haunted was going to have a video display at one point. We were developing, like, it was going to have, like, a Linux board in it. We axed that because the people we were working on it, I wasn't doing Linux stuff because that's not my bag. But we just couldn't get it working in time, and I'm glad we did, because had we tried to make video, especially considering the original reaction to our art, people would have hated it. So I'm glad we did Dots. Yeah?
Were you working with Chuck at this time, or did he come in late?
I was working with Chuck at this time. Yep. Wait. Yes, I was, but this is before he started Spooky Pinball. So I was working on this game for almost a full year before he even had the crazy idea to start his own company. And I was like, are you kidding? I thought he was nuts. I still think he's nuts. So that's why we actually did this as the first game, because this game was already a year in development. So it was going to be x86 Linux with an LCD. I'm so glad we didn't do it. Hobbit is really beautiful, but we just didn't have the money to spend on something like that. We didn't have a license, which meant we had no money. So if the voices aren't professional, like some people like to complain, it's because we had no money. It's like we had to make a game that was good first and then sell it. We didn't have the luxury of saying we had Predator or anything like that. So we had to fight for everything, which, you know, I think is that helped us. It made us like fighters, like Rocky. So, yeah, we downgraded to DMD. And I was like, I wonder if I can run a DMD with a propeller. And I could, because the propeller is really fast. So there's my first DMD test. I'm like, oh, I get a picture of Nikola Tesla. And then when we were starting on we were working on the zombie game already at this point. And I was like, oh, I should bump this up to 16 shades of color. Or 4 shades of gray, the Game Boy story. And so I realized that, you know, we could easily do a 16-shade display. So I think like 3 months before we started shipping to America's Most Haunted, I re-exported every graphic in 16 shades at the absolute last minute. I also rewrote the file system at the last minute. And I can say that now because it worked. Here's the prototype toys. That's like the elevator. I prototyped it in acrylic on my laser. Obviously, we didn't build it in acrylic, but, you know, it's good to start that way. So originally, the ball was just going to go into the back and hit a switch, and then it could go down or up. So you could also load balls from behind on the first floor, then bring them up to the second floor and dump them out into the crawl space that we were talking about. But again, it wasn't reliable enough, so we just simplified. So that thing on the left, that was some sort of whirligig BS that we were going to use instead of the ghost. And then, again, John Papaduke's like, that area is gold. It's like, because there's another thing I learned from him. See, I mean, I think he squandered a lot of stuff, but I did learn a lot, so I give him props for that. Most people are right-handed. They push the right flipper button, which shoots balls to the upper left. That's where you put the winner toy. So he's like, you got to put whatever is there has to be great. So we had the ghost. Originally, he was going to have two servo-controlled arms and rotate, and then this one, you can see I have a gear intersecting at 90 degrees, so the arms were going to automatically rotate when he turned. That was still too complex, and then we eventually just simplified him down to one rotating ghost. Again, you know, simplification is good. This is another thing that actually Dennis Nordman had this idea. Because Dennis Nordman's in our game. One of the ghosts is the voice of Dennis Nordman. He wanted to do a Pepper's Ghost thing. Pepper's Ghost is kind of like a Disneyland thing where you have a scene in the background represented by those shapes on the right. And then below that, you actually have an illuminated ghost. And then there's a 45-degree mirror which makes them appear in the background. The idea was it was either as you defeated the ghost, they would disappear from this, meaning you'd gotten rid of them. Because if you added them as you beat them, it's like, oh, I don't know how many ghosts there are. But if you start with six, you're like, oh, I know how many ghosts I have to kill. Yeah.
Mansion used to be that. Well,
yeah. I think that's where Dennis got his inspiration from. It seems like Dennis Nordman, his other hobby is he builds very elaborate dollhouses. And Pinball Machine is kind of like, it's like a miniature amusement park, or it's kind of like a dollhouse. In a way, it's like a mechanical dollhouse. So this is, well, almost the final ghost. So I sculpted him in clay, then I 3D scanned it, and then I shrunk him down. So this is the ghost on the left is the one that's in the game. The one that was actually sculpted was like 3X bigature. You always make things bigger for more detail. So this project is when we really started using 3D printers a lot. I still have this MakerBot. I've kept that thing running an amazingly long time. It's fun. It's like having like an old car. So I originally 3D printed the up-down target bank mechanism. On the lower left, you can see a Vuk that was prototyped, way over prototyped. That thing, you could have driven that over with a truck, the thing in the lower left. And then you see the ghost, but see how his arms have plastic under them? That's because the arms were out straight and they needed support material. So what I did was I took him in a mesh mixer, chopped off his arms, and then redrew them like this so it could print without support at a gradual angle. To save time and cleanup. And then at the last minute, a friend of mine was like, why doesn't the ghost light up? I'm like, yeah, why doesn't it? So it was kind of tricky because I had to take the 3D mesh and do an interior object subtraction, make them hollow. That probably took like 20 hours to get that model done. And then I just made a little circuit board with a 3D, RGB lights. And he changes color based off the mode. And so, like, the bar ghost is blue to make you think of Bud Light because the cans. The army ghost is red, conflict. The doctor ghost is green, like disease and sickness. I put some thought into the color. Come on, laptop. Oh, no. Oh, no. It's automatically updating to Windows 10. So... The three bank target on America's Most Wanted, that's a standard part. They use it on Spider-Man, Tron, other games I can't think of right now. So that slider part, you can buy that from Pinball Life. But the motorized mech is kind of expensive and proprietary, so we made our own. So along the way, we found a vendor near Chuck with a metal laser, which is a pretty badass thing, but it's also expensive. But let someone else buy it. So this is a mech we made basically to replace it. It's got the rotating cam on a servo, and then this is just the bent piece of metal that interfaces it with the rising target mech. So, you know, instead of buying like a $100 mech or whatever it is, you know, we're spending like $15. Yeah. You know, I would definitely say our games are probably not as well engineered as things like The Big Lebowski, but they're more affordable too. So, like I always tell everybody, I grew up in the 80s with all the cheap 8-bit computers and saving bytes and bits, and I try to making things inexpensive is usually a good way to go. Okay, another thing that I don't have a metal laser, but I have a regular laser. So I would get like if a certain card stock, I don't know what it's like 040, you can get the card stock and it is a perfect substitute for steel. So I'd actually prototype things with card stock and tabs on my laser, put them together, and then once I knew they worked, then we could transfer them over to the big metal laser. So again, it's like doing things with cheap materials, making sure it works, and then going to the expensive stuff. Then so you have a 3D printed. Actually, the doors are still 3D printed. There are a lot of 3D printed parts on America's Most Haunted. Here comes the punchline again, because we didn't have any money. Whereas Rob Zombie, pretty much everything is resin casted by Matt from Back Alley Creations. Oh, there's Dennis Nordman. It's kind of funny. I was playing Adam's Family, and then right next to me, at the show here, and then right next to me was Whitewater, and someone's like, why is there a Bigfoot in this game? And I was like, because the designer looks like Bigfoot. And so, yeah, Dennis Nordman's like 9 feet tall. So this is him doing the voice of Dr. Ghost. And we've had people say, why does your recording sound like it was done on a cheap microphone in your shop? And I'm like, that's because it was done with a cheap microphone in our shop. But you see, he's reading off the iPad. Yeah. The America's Most Haunted had 180 pages of script. Because I didn't want the voices to repeat. Because you play something like Medieval Madness, that's why people like it. I was very adamant. I want to make a game that has humor in it, because humor is sorely missing from pinball. It still is. I mean, Ghostbusters kind of brings it back, but that's a big reason why people like games like Medieval Madness. It had humor. So here are our evil ghosts. So there were kind of a higher resolution version of each ghost, also a pixel art. So on the left, that's the hotel ghost. So there's the drawing of him, and there's also the pixel art version. So I kind of had to create both versions. So each ghost, the ghosts were based off the location. So first I thought, okay, what are the haunted places you're visiting in this game? Prison, hospital, bar, war area, hotel, theater, because those are the places that people think are the most haunted. Then I'm like, okay, what ghost is in these places? So prison warden, okay, what does he do? And I'm like, yeah, let's make him a cannibal. Doctor, the doctor does evil experiments, which is kind of based off, you know, folklore from the East. What's in the bar? A prostitute. Have this really, I guess he's not technically racist, but very stereotypical Southern Confederate captain. Then the hotel ghost was interesting. Originally, he was going to be like a bellboy who was like in love with a guest. And I'm like, that's too lame. I'm going to make him into H.H. Holmes serial killer, Devil in the White City. And that was actually the ghost of Brian Kelly, that cranky guy from Pinside. And I'm like, Brian, I have a ghost character that is a murdering psychopath, and I think you'd be a perfect voice for it. And he's like, F you, Ben. But it worked out great because he's like, oh, your skin would make a great lampshade. Yeah, so it was fun coming up with cool ghosts and, putting the humor in. So here's our backlash that everyone hated. So we definitely learned something, or I say we should have learned from Gottlieb. You cannot use photographs of people unless they're famous, because everyone thinks of Bad Girls, Genesis, any Gottlieb game, basically, from the 80s. So what I did, basically, I just took this design and then I painted artists. I'm like, okay, just redraw this in hand-drawn art and everyone will love it even though it's the same goddamn layout. And they did. Well, actually, they still don't love it, but it's better than it was. Because we took the Photoshop thing. Guess what? Everyone uses Photoshop. Except for Alex Horley. He actually, all the Rob Zombie art was literally drawn in oil and then scanned. So, and then scanned into Photoshop. So, we had the kind of like the green version of the art, and we took it to Pin Expo 2013, and we only made one sale, and we're like, this is not good. So, in 1 week, I redrew all the cabinet art. So, that blue swirly ghost, I did that like in 3 nights, and then I hired an artist to redraw the back glass. Because basically, people hated it, and they're like, change the artwork. And Steve Ritchie has a saying, if two people tell you it sucks, it sucks. So that's why I changed everything. And it worked because by the time we got to MGC, then we started selling the games. But the real thing that actually made America's Most Haunted sell well was once they started getting into people's homes and they realized that the code was really good, that's when they really started to fly off the shelves. Like by the time we got to Texas 2015, it took a year to sell the first 100 and it took a week to sell the last 50. At a certain point, it just went, wow, it just flew off the shelves.
How was those produced then?
What do you mean?
Like the machine. I mean, like...
They're built... Yeah, they're... They're built by hand. Yeah. They're not built by robots. They're made in Benton, Wisconsin, which is on the southwest side of Wisconsin. Charlie started out in a business incubator. He had two units. And then this spring, they built a new 6,000-square-foot facility. And that's where they're making Rob Zombie. And the Rob Zombie game is going a lot faster. Because, the slow sales of AMH were okay in the start because also they were, we were building them slow. But now they're going pretty fast. AMH got up to about 10 units a week at the end. They actually artificially slowed down production of it because Rob Zombie wasn't ready to be built yet. Because we didn't want to reach the point where there's nothing for the workers to do. We wanted to make sure people stayed employed. So we slowed down AMH, then had to really push Rob Zombie, the game. We didn't actually push Rob Zombie himself. But this is the prototype game that I programmed everything on and that we also took to MGC. And then I think I sold this playfield to Pinball Bulbs because once this game was done, I never wanted to see it again. I actually told Chuck I wanted to buy one so I could blow it up, like just in a fit of rage. So then Steve Ritchie was playing it at a show. Well, this is actually the second show he played at. The first show was with this prototype. This is a production machine he's playing here. And I walked into the room and I'm like, oh crap, Steve Ritchie's playing my game. And he's like, I don't hate it, which is the best praise you can get from Steve Ritchie. Actually, there was a few things in this game that Steve Ritchie gave me some input on. I don't know if you can... Oh, yeah, I guess you... See on the left-hand side, just below that wooden thing, that big square target, right above the word tech, he was like, make that a skinny target. And then he's like, inside the loop, make it metal. And even though we were going to make it metal anyway, I'm like, okay. And then I think, the area about by the door, he said, make that wider. So those are the three Steve Ritchie suggestions that made it into the production game. And now he's testing it. Okay, all right. So we got about 20 minutes left. Questions on America's Most Haunted, and then we'll move on to Rob Zombie.
Why did you guys slow down production instead of making more machines?
Okay, so it was around about 6 months into the sales and like the shipping, we'd only shipped about 75. And honestly, the break even, like don't lose your house number, was 100 units. So we actually, it was Hilton, aka Y Snow on Pinside, because he's a friend of mine in real life and I live near him. He's not as annoying in real life, by the way. Still pretty annoying. We like to joke. I'm like, well, Hilton, you're better in real life and I'm worse. It's like inverse. Anyway, he's like, if you artificially limit the sales, you will sell out faster. So we're like, okay. And we were like 250, 200. We settled on 150. And as soon as, so in Expo 2014, we had the better art, we had a production model. Like, okay, we're only going to make 150 of these. And at that time, we'd sold about 75. And that definitely spurred sales. Pinball people say they don't care about limited editions. Wrong. They don't care about price. Wrong. Everything they say that they don't want, they want. And unfortunately, yeah, once we got to 100, they just flew off the shelf. It was at Texas Pinball Fest 2015. It was insane how fast they sold. And honestly, we easily could have sold 100 more, but we're like, you know what? We have to stick to our word. We said 150. We're providing that limited rare value to the people that believed in us, and we have to stick to it, even if that means we don't get to buy new cars with the extra 100 units. So ultimately, we decided that was more important than money.
You do a limited edition again?
Well, I had the April Fool's joke. It was the America's Most Haunted LE all-female edition, just to troll people. But then with Rob Zombie, you bumped it up to 300. And we actually had a lot of people ask why you're only making 300 Rob Zombies. And I think they could have God, they had 300 pre-orders locked in before even Rob Zombie's fan base was notified of it. That they could have easily sold 600, but with that one, it wasn't so much making it a limited number, but we actually knew how long it took to make 150 AMH. And they're like, okay, we can make them this much faster with a bigger facility, but when you get a license, it's more about the time you have the license for rather than the number. It's usually 3 years. So we're like, okay, we want to be very conservative. We don't want to sell more than we can actually build and then have to renegotiate the license, which is almost always more expensive. So we kept the number conservative. However, after Domino's, then there's Domino's and there's another game we haven't announced, which is, you know, kind of more of a smaller distributor title. But the game after that, which I'm pretty sure we are going to do, it's a pretty good license, and that one will probably at least 500 to 1,000, at which point then Stern will probably, you know, stop being friendly with us, but whatever. So it's mostly about making, you know, making realistically, we don't want to sell games we can't make, because and sustainable growth, or, you know, realistic growth. So any more questions about AMH before we move on to Rob Zombie, and then we'll wrap it up.
How hard is it first game, you know, getting vendors lined up? You know, a lot of you guys are doing in-house, but a lot of these upstarts have a lot of problems trying to get, they find it's a lot harder to get all the pieces of the puzzle than they realize. Did you guys run into that?
Yeah, we did. Like I said, with the slider mech, it's like, you can buy this, but this part you can also buy, but it's really expensive. So it's like, what can we make out of metal, you know, at the metal shop that can replace an existing part? There's also patent issues, like the standard Williams ball trough was one of the last protected things. And there's certain vendors that basically don't want you to use it. So a lot of times we had to re-engineer things just to avoid patent issues. Some of that stuff has gone on a patent, but we actually ended up with, by the time AMH was done, we have a custom spooky slings, spooky flippers, spooky Vux. Like, eventually we got to the point where we could get Terry at Pinball Live to make us custom everything. So now, and there's it's not technically a spooky ball trough, but the ball trough on a Rob Zombie was actually originally intended for Predator, but now we're using it. I believe Dutch is using it as well. So it's actually an 8-ball trough.
Yeah. Since you're making all these custom parts, have you ever thought of selling those as well?
You know, we haven't really gotten requests for that. People have asked for our board set. And the honest answer with that is there's two reasons. One, every board we build immediately goes into a game. We barely can build them fast enough for the games, let alone other people. And two, the time it would take to document it we don't want to document it. It's barely documented as is, and actually documenting and supporting it for third party would...
Do you like open source it? Like maybe like...
It is open source. You can go on GitHub, download the schematic, and make your own in China if you want. Yeah. I mean, if you're crazy enough to build a pinball machine, go right ahead. I guess I would call it the you'd have to be crazy to build a pinball machine protection, but no, it's all open source. You can download the source code and everything because we don't care, because no one's crazy enough to build a pinball machine.
But even like open source the plans, like just like here's like the parts we built here. Oh, I guess they're not.
That I don't know, because again, if we get those from Terry, he probably has a different feeling about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're crazy enough to build a pinball.
All right, so the last thing I want to talk about today is is the Rob Zombie Spook Show International. So by the time I got done with America's Most Haunted, I was really, really sick of pinball. It's really, pinball is hard, as the joke goes. So when we got to Rob Zombie's, I'm like, yeah, if I try to program this game, I'm probably going to just jump off a cliff. Hey, Jerry. So, I was like, Chuck, you need to find somebody else. But I did do some stuff in the background for Rob Zombie, which I can talk about briefly. So Rob Zombie is based off the Pinhex system. So I did the system engineering, and I made all the new libraries. So the new programmer, I didn't want to give him the absolute mess of spaghetti code, which was America's Most Haunted. It works, but it's a mess. So I actually made it a slightly better mess. And I'm like, okay, here's this. You know, basically, we turned it into a library. And I guess we could have that online. We just, again... We have enough to do making our own games, you know. But you could get P-Rock, of course. We did a new color display, and we actually were able to make that cost neutral with a dot matrix, which is cool. Rob Zombie started as Pinball Zombies from Beyond the Grave, which was going to be Chuck's first game. But again, it wasn't far enough along. That's why we did America's Most Haunted first. And then basically we retweaked that layout. And I was like, Chuck, we need to change this, this, that we need to put an orbit here. Like, I was pretty adamant, like, we need to change things on this. Otherwise, you know, people are going to be mad. So I was like ripping up the white wood and like, yeah. Sometimes I can be pretty mean. I helped with some of the art. Alex Horley did the side art, but on the play field, we had to add some, you know, direction trails and whatnot. And I also drew the inserts. I wrote about half the script, which was kind of fun because we worked in some dumb jokes like lines from Roadhouse. Like the part was, what is it? It was tails, like when he stabs the guy with a knife. So for no reason whatsoever, Rob Zombie says it in the game. Like one of the fail quotes is, it was tails, and he said it. Yeah. And then I didn't bring them with me, but we started working with another with two Davids. There's David Van Ness, he's the dot guy, and then David Fawcett, or Fwamza on Pinside, is the programmer. So David Van Ness and I found this really great tool, which is we use Microsoft OneNote, right? So you can have a OneNote document on Microsoft OneDrive or whatever, and two people can work on it at the same time. So I have a Wacom computer station at home, and so we would draw the storyboards for the dots. We would could both work on them at the same time. So we would draw that up, and then David would turn it into dots. So I did the most of the storyboarding for the dots, including the infamous ball save animation. We were trying to think, is it the most disgusting thing possible? Because originally the Rob Zombie game started a little bit more campy. It was like you were the new guy on the Rob Zombie crew, and it turns out that all of the monsters are real, and you have to deal with them. So like, you can't be my tour manager until you fight the Super Beast. That was the original pitch, but then Rob wanted like more just straight horror. So we're like, okay, let's make this really, really bloody and violent because, again, that's like with the Predator game, people are like, ooh, it's an R-rated pin, and that's not happening. So we're like, okay, let's make this one the first really violent, vulgar, R-rated pin. There's a family mode. There's actually, there's family dots and family speech. So you can, like, there's different layers because some people are okay with blood but not okay with profanity. Yeah, so we tried to make it really disgusting and bloody. Yeah, and it was kind of fun. So let's see what else we got here for photos. Come on, computer. Come on. Wake up. Wake up. Windows 10 is installing again. Oh, so here's the new spooky facility, and apparently they put in a sign, too. Benton is a small town in rural Wisconsin. They were able to get the land for basically nothing. Basically, the city's like, hey, you create jobs, and, you know, we can get more tax money from a building than an empty field. So the city was very reasonable in helping them get that started. So now they have, like, 6,000 square feet, which I'm sure they'll grow out of immediately, especially once they start getting – probably the end of the year, they'll actually have, like, three games in production. So they're gonna be
– Is it, like, an assembly line, or is it just, like, one person working on it?
There's a few more photos here. Oh. So Chuck is leaping to his death. He's had enough, apparently, in this photo. I think this is everyone there currently. So it's not a line per se, but they have stations. So they start on one end and all the parts are around it. They build in the game, bring it to the next station, next station, next station. And then they have this main area here where they do the final assembly and testing. I mean, it's still not a very big building, but it's better than what they had. Here you can kind of see it. Like, just a second. Okay, yeah, so the far area of this photo is where the game starts. And then see in the middle, you can see that Metallica poster. Like right below that is where they start. Then it comes in, out to the final assembly area. I mean, I think they probably should get more of a line set up, and maybe they will, especially once they get multiple games. But this is what they have right now. So spooky is the only job where you can have a box labeled corpse piles. So we started working with Matt from Back Alley Creations, and he's done some really great toys. If you've seen in the game, like there's a Captain Spaulding with really nice detail, Living Dead Girl. There's actually quite a few cast toys in that, and they're all really nicely done, as opposed to America's Most Haunted, which were just enough, I guess. So it's been good. You know, we were able to actually... Rob Zombie is pretty cost neutral with America's Most Haunted, and the costs of it are spread out more. Instead of like America's Most Haunted, I did a lot of it, so I got a lot more money. This one, more people can be involved, so it's a little bit more, it's better redistribution of wealth you know, for lack of a better word. So we're able to bring in Matt and bring in a dots guy, and it's been a lot, you know, bringing in more people basically. And I don't go crazy, you know, with all the work I have to do. So this is on the right is Rob Zombie playing Rob Zombie, very meta. Rob Zombie is a pinhead as well, so you know, he's into the games, and you know, he has an idea of what he likes, and he's got a pretty good collection. So as far as the license was concerned, for Chuck, it was pretty good because he could basically just call Rob Zombie or email. He didn't have to go through all these licensing layers. I don't know if you can see it. Well, in the game, the logo. So we had this amazing, like the back of the LE version of the backhouse, I think is just effing fantastic that Alex did. And then they had the Rob Zombie Spook Show International is the name of the comic book. And the logo is not very good. And it basically looks like PowerPoint. And Chuck had taken that and put it on the beautiful art. And he sent that to me. And I'm like, no. I was like, you cannot do this. And he's like, but that's their logo. I'm like, this looks like crap. And we had a big fight about it. And then he's like, well, this person is like, I'm like, take it right to Rob. And then Rob's like, yeah, you're right. It looks like crap. So Rob actually used Illustrator and drew the logo that's on the game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so basically you get it from Rob Zombie. It's approved. But, you know, that logo that they had, it was fine for a comic book, but put onto the oil-drawn art, it looked like a PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was something that I've been working with Chuck with. I'm like, sometimes you have to, like, get into fights and to get make it look better. But then the side art on the game, I effing love. When I saw that, I'm like, that is just amazing because, like, skulls and machine guns, and it looked like something from heavy metal, which would also be an amazing pin for someone to make. Any questions on Rob Zombie? We've got about 7 minutes, and I know Jerry probably wants to talk after me. So any questions on Rob Zombie or anything in general?
What's your production rate?
With Rob Zombie? I believe they've shipped about 40. They'll be done with the LEs in a week or two. So it's actually ramped up pretty good. It's ramping up faster than America's Most Haunted did back in the day. Although there were a few issues with the game of the show here, which I'm going to talk to Chuck about. They need to make sure that the games are good or right. It's going pretty well. And then the Domino's game, which a lot of people are like, why are they making that? It's like, if a large company wants you to make something, you make it. Business 101. That one's apparently coming along really well, too. I guess it plays really good. It's kind of – it has the ghost loop, kind of, but instead of a ghost, it's annoyed. We took some shortcuts, but that's, you know, basically Domino's is like, we need this game. Actually, it has to be shown next week in Vegas. So Chuck's down in Atlanta right now, and then he has to come back home, build the first final Domino's from scratch, and then take it to Vegas. So he's probably going to be pretty tired by the time he's done. But the production's gotten a lot faster. And are also, as I was telling you earlier, the board stuff, we have a proper bed of nails tester and auto programmer and testing sequence now. So that was a problem in the past, but that's also been improved. A couple more questions?
How hard is it to come up with good shot geometry, something that's original or without just borrowing?
It is kind of difficult because there's only so many ways you can shoot a ball around a piece of wood. What I try to do is just use the hot glue, move it a quarter inch, change the angle until it feels good. Like I can hit the shot, the ball has enough power to make it up the ramp or make it around, and it feels nice and satisfying. Because a lot of times there's shots where it's kind of clunk, 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 but nice deep shots and that feel satisfying, that's what's important. And also with America's Most Haunted, we tried to make it really fast, and also just as important as where the ball goes is how it gets back to the player. So if the ball comes back to your flippers nice, and you're like, okay, I'm in control, I can make another shot. Whereas I like with Game of Thrones, like that game, well, and this is a Steve Ritchie thing, like if you don't make the shot, you get punished. And that's the thing too, so you have to basically feel like how much control the player is going to have. But as I mentioned earlier, America's Most Haunted, we started with foam core, and the game got faster and faster as you do metal and wood, and I think it got a little too fast. So that's something I want to take into account in the future games as well. But also, like in America's Most Haunted, if you make the middle shot, added this lightning effect for no reason, like, it's like, oh, it feels good. I made that shot, you know. So that's why we use foam core and hot glue, so we can very rapidly change it.
Kind of going on that, you know, I kind of understand that the way pinball, the shape and size of it kind of made sense because it got put into bars and things of that application. But it seems like now, since the market has kind of changed, I think you can really kind of explore different shapes and sizes of cabinets. that
pinball buyers are very conservative in what they like. If it changes too much, they don't want it.
If it can't fit down their lineup of eight machines, they're already there.
Yeah, like look about how much people complain about where the Switch is on Spike.
Oh, really?
Because, well, yeah, because if you put games right next to each other, and unless you're like, you know, unless you are a skinny 90-pound person, you can't reach in there and get it. Uh-huh. Yeah, they hate change. Don't change anything ever. Yeah. I've learned, basically what I've learned a lot in the last 5 or 6 years of pinball. They, like I said, they love hand-drawn art. Stern's realized that. That's Pinhead Kryptonite. Oh, hand-drawn art. Hmm. Yeah, and they hate change. maybe one more question, then we'll let Jerry get in here.
What's the best piece of advice any designer gave you?
Oh, gosh. The single best piece of advice? Oh, gosh. Probably Steve Ritchie. If two people tell you it sucks, it sucks. And he was right. We had the only, when we took the green cabinet to Expo 2013, the only person who didn't hate it was Roger Sharp. And it was like, okay, Roger Sharp doesn't hate it, but everyone else does. Roger Sharp, everyone else. I'm going to have to go with, well, a lot more than two people told me it's. Yeah, good advice. So, thank you for coming, and Jerry will be next.